Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
What up, Cavs Nation? I'm your host, Ethan Sands, and I'm back with another episode of the Wine and Gold Talk podcast. I'm joined by your favorite beat reporter, Chris Fedor. What up, Chris?
What's going on, Ethan? How are you, man?
Chris, I am okay, I guess is the word to say at this moment, because we just got done watching the Cavs fall yet again to the Knicks, this time at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. And it was definitely interesting from the very beginning. Jalen Brunson got hurt in the second possession of the game, the first possession for the Knicks, with him going up for a mid-range and seemingly hurting himself on a non-contact injury and was unable to return for them for the remainder of the game. It was really weird to me. Like, it looked like he got hurt when he was going up on the shot, Chris. It didn't look like Isaac, who was guarding him at the time, touched him. None of that. I was really confused when it happened, and obviously to see the Knicks still be able, without four of their starters, to actually dominate the Cavs on the glass, mainly by Josh Hart with 19 rebounds. And even though they didn't really have an interior big man presence, I was confused. What did you take away from today's game?
It was a bad loss. There's no other way around that one, Ethan. We can talk about Donovan Mitchell missing and Caris LeVert missing, and that's a lot of firepower for the Cavs to be missing, and obviously they're a completely different team when Donovan Mitchell is not out there. The numbers support that. But for the Knicks to be without everything that they were without tonight, for them to not be playing very good basketball over the last month, basically, and for the Cavs to be at home, to have that kind of performance on national TV against the Knicks after the Knicks lost Jalen Brunson is disappointing. And the Cavs have a little bit of soul searching to do here as we head into March. It is a grueling schedule. They are going to be playing a lot of playoff caliber opponents because a lot of the lesser opponents they've already been part of the schedule that the Cavs were able to take advantage of. So now it's about finding their rhythm again offensively, doing, like I said, a little bit of soul searching and figuring out if they can become the team that they want to become heading into the playoffs. Because ultimately, for them, that's what it's all about. And after tonight, it's obviously only early March. There are a number of games remaining in this month, a number of games remaining in the regular season. But after tonight's loss against New York, the Cavs dropped out of the 2 seed to the 3 seed. And, you know, with every loss, New York gets closer, Philadelphia gets closer, the Bucks have already leapfrogged them. And we've talked about it a number of times on the podcast, how seeding in the Eastern Conference could be the difference between a first-round exit and a long playoff run. So combine all of it together, and it was a very disappointing performance by the Cavs. They cannot play the way that they did tonight against the Knicks and expect to be considered a contender by a lot of people and expect to make a deep playoff run.
Yeah, and I think you hit on it there. You mentioned the national televised game and how the Cavs and Cavs fans have wanted them to get the recognition. I remember a couple of days ago, Stephen A. Smith had mentioned that the Cavs looked like they could be a contender. And against the team that beat them in the first round last year without all of the pieces that they had, and then to then lose Jalen Brunson, who JB Bickerstaff said before the game and after the game that they had been game planning for, is it's so disappointing to see the Cavs, who went on an incredible run in the middle of the season. And now the Knicks coming into the game had won three of their last 10 games and were not playing good basketball, as you mentioned. And somehow the lights again were just too bright for the Cavs and for the big men on the inside for the Cavs. Like, Jared Allen had less than 10 rebounds yet again. Evan Mobley had 13 and 13, so you got to see him do his thing. But it was interesting, though, Chris, because these guys both had more than 5 assists on the night. You got to see them do some big-on-big action with some lobs. You got to see them be the center hubs for some of the offensive things. It just felt like there wasn't enough interior presence, even though they were doing everything that they could do to get the offense started.
I think that's unfair. Look, I mean, I think if we're having a conversation about tonight's game specifically, and we're taking out preconceived notions and things that are fresh in our mind, I don't know how you look at tonight's game against the Cavs and the Knicks and say, okay, that was on Jared Allen and Evan Mobley. They weren't tough enough. They weren't physical enough. I don't know how you say that. I mean, yes, from a team-wide perspective, I would say that the Knicks were tougher. From a team-wide perspective, I would say that the Knicks were more physical, that they played with more consistent effort, and they wanted it more. They got to more loose balls. They got to more 50-50 balls. They got more rebounds overall than the Cavs. But it wasn't the lopsided nature that last year's playoff series was in terms of rebounding, in terms of offensive rebounding, and in terms of interior presence. If you think about it, Jared Allen and Evan Mobley had 20 combined rebounds, which was 9 more than the two players that occupied the same position as them, Precious Achiuwa and Isaiah Hartenstein. The Cavs' rebounding issues, the Cavs' lack of toughness issues that people are going to point to after this game, extend far beyond Evan Mobley and Jared Allen. So I just don't know. I just don't know how you look at tonight's game and point to those guys first.
Right. And I don't disagree that those guys, they still were successful in their games. But my thing was when JB Bickerstaff mentioned pregame that, especially with having Josh Hart and knowing his rebounding capabilities and understanding that even when a big might be looking to help more and shift over and allows for them to be vulnerable on the defensive rebound and offensive rebounding side of the ball. I felt like, to be frank, Josh Hart is 6'6", right? And you have two bigs. You have Evan Mobley and Jared Allen, who are both 7 foot. I was under the impression that both of them should have been able to bully the interior and be able to get offensive rebounds and create the offense that way, or create second chance opportunities for the Cavs that way. With that not being the case, and then also having Josh Hart have 19 rebounds on his own, it felt like the Cavs were not able to maintain one of their key objectives, which was limiting the rebounds period for the Knicks players, especially the guards coming in on the rebounds from the opposite side or whatever it may be. And I expected more. I wanted more from Jared Allen and Evan Mobley. Well, more so Jared Allen, especially after the playoff series last year. It's not to say that they didn't have a decent game. I just wanted more based on what had happened and how they had reacted after those games.
I just think you're looking in the wrong direction. Points in the paints was relatively even. Second chance points, even. Offensive rebounds, even. The Cavs lost this game because they scored 98 freaking points. That's why they lost this game. The Cavs lost this game because they scored one basket in the final 4 minutes when the game was hanging in the balance. The Cavs have played the Knicks 3 times so far this year, Ethan. 3. and they have yet to crack the 100-point mark against the Knicks defensively. It was the same thing in the playoffs last year. In the five games, non-competitive, the Cavs couldn't find a way to consistently score 100 points. In today's NBA, the Cavs gave up 107 points defensively tonight. 107 points! You can win a game giving up 107. You can't win too many games scoring 98. So yeah, I get it. Donovan Mitchell wasn't there. Caris LeVert wasn't there. Two of the top five scorers for the Cavs. But 98 points in today's NBA? That's not rebounding. That's not defense. That's not second chance opportunities. That's not being good enough on the offensive end of the floor. Max Strus, not good enough. Dean Wade, not good enough. George Niang, not good enough. The Knicks bench, 44. Cavs bench, 25. That has nothing to do with Evan Mobley and Jared Allen.
I understand where you're coming from. I'm going to reiterate this. I think just being able to create second chance opportunities and giving them more opportunities on the offensive side of the ball with offensive rebounds could have been helpful. But we'll move on. It feels like we're beating a dead horse at this point on that end. But I also wanted to point out, obviously, the 107 points for the Knicks. Like you said, you can win a game that way. But you also look at the players that they were able to acquire over the trade deadline. And you also look at just what their core was able to do even without the players that they were missing. Like Dante DiVincenzo had 28 points. Josh Hart went for a triple-double with 13, 19, and 10. And then you also had Bojan Bogdanovic going for 20 points. It feels like when they have multiple players that can go for 20, and then you just have the Cavs with one, obviously you look at the offensive end, but you also think about where the Cavs are going to be when they're fully healthy, hopefully, going into the playoff run. And we come back to this topic yet again, Chris. Sam Merrill, 7 threes, 21 points, led the team in points, led the team in scoring. And I think that's the thing that's different about this team. They have what they need to be successful rather than what they didn't have last year. They have the ability to shoot from range and spread the floor out and do those things. So when is it going to click against these tougher teams? And I guess that's what we're going to have to figure out during March, during this tough stretch in March, and then again in April ahead of the postseason.
Well, that's the thing, Ethan. Theoretically, they have the pieces that they need, but those pieces have to play well. Max Strus was not good tonight. George Niang was not good tonight. Dean Wade was not good tonight. The Cavs got absolutely nothing from their bench aside from Sam Merrill. The Cavs got absolutely nothing from the power forward spot behind Evan Mobley. That's a weak point on this roster right now. Evan Mobley technically is the starting power forward, but he's also the backup center. So that means there are opportunities there at the backup power forward spot for George Niang and Dean Wade. Those are the two guys that are on this roster that are traditional power forwards. Theoretically, at times, in the right matchup, the Cavs could downsize. They could go small ball. They could put Strus at the four or Okoro at the four, or something along those lines. Maybe even LeVert at the four in certain matchups. But for the most part, it's Dean Wade and George Niang. Like, those guys have to be better because JB Bickerstaff is trying to round out these five-man rotations with somebody to give him something at the power forward spot if it's not Evan Mobley. And like, the minutes when Evan Mobley is at the five aren't going to be as effective, and they're not going to be as successful if the Cavs are getting absolutely nothing from Dean Wade or George Niang, which has been the case basically since the All-Star break. So yeah, I mean, in theory, the Cavs have more spacing. They have more shooting. They beefed up their bench a little bit. Not having Caris LeVert hurts the bench production. Everybody understands that. They are more diverse on the offensive end of the floor because of the movement that they can create with Max Strus and Sam Merrill. So you're right. In theory, this is a better version of the team that we saw last April against the Knicks. They have more pathways to success offensively. But the NBA is about execution. The NBA is about those pieces coming together and functioning well enough for a team to be successful. And right now, the Cavs, since the All-Star break, just don't have enough guys that are consistently playing well for them the way that they did when they went on that run for 6 weeks without Darius Garland and Evan Mobley.
Yeah, I mean, the backup power forward spot in Dean Wade and George Niang were 0 for 10 combined tonight.
And 0 of 8 from three-point range.
Those are the shots that those guys are scheduled to take. But that's unacceptable. And we'll just have to see if they're able to improve. Or, like the fans have been mentioning, their minutes might have to just get reduced based on the matchups and things of that nature.
But how do they get reduced? They can't possibly be reduced. They can't because they don't have any other options consistently at power forward. Like, what are they supposed to do to fill those minutes? We can sit here and we can say George Niang should not be playing. Cool. Who's going to play instead of him? For those 15 minutes or whatever, who's going to play instead of him at that position?
My thought is when Tristan Thompson comes back.
He's not back right now. I'm saying right now. What do you do? You going to play Sam Merrill at power forward? No.
That's not viable.
And you're certainly not going to downsize to Max Strus in a game where you're playing against one of the best rebounding teams in the NBA. So, like, what do you do?
I know he didn't shoot particularly well, but because of what he brings on the defensive end, I would have gave more of George Niang's minutes to Dean Wade. That's what, personally, I would have done. Because not only does he spread the floor offensively, but he also can bring a whole different dimension on defense. And it's hard to be in and out of a lineup and then just be tasked with guarding somebody that is extremely good on the ball and also a little bit bigger than you. In Hartenstein, it's different for Dean Wade to be thrown around in that lineup. But I definitely think with more minutes and more time to adjust to guarding their lineup, he would have been more effective in my eyes. Not saying he would have been better offensively, but I think defensively he would have been able to continue to help the Cavs more than he did in the 20 minutes that he got tonight.
Well, he played 20 minutes tonight. He went 0 for 4 from the field and 0 for 4 from three-point range. He had 3 total rebounds, and he was a minus 5. So, I mean, we're trying to pretend that there is a viable solution that is better right now. And it's like sometimes with the way that a team is playing or the way guys are performing, there aren't any good options. And I feel that's the case right now for the Cavs, given the way that both Niang and Wade are playing. And look, maybe some of this has to do with the fact that it's hard for Niang and Wade to get into a rhythm. It's hard for them to have a full understanding of their role, especially when it comes to Dean Wade, and he gets usually about a 3-minute burst in the first quarter, and that's about it. But hey, look, other guys have had those same kinds of situations, and Sam Merrill comes to mind, and they have found a way to be effective in those limited minutes if that's the kind of minute load that they're going to get. So with Wade and Niang playing poorly at the same time, I feel like it just puts a spotlight on the fact that J.B. Bickerstaff, for all the things that he does wrong, and he certainly is not perfect when it comes to being a coach, and there are areas where he absolutely needs to get better. And he got out-coached tonight by Tom Thibodeau, just like he got out-coached by Thibodeau in the series last year. But J.B. Bickerstaff is probably looking at the situation saying, what am I supposed to do here? I don't have good options at this particular moment, given how poorly both those guys are playing simultaneously.
All right, Chris, I think we need to take a quick break. But before that, I want to put the listeners on to our subscription service, because you can become a Cavs Insider and interact with me and Chris by subscribing to Subtext. Through Subtext, you can get insider information that doesn't get posted on Twitter, on X, on LinkedIn, on all of those different sites, and you can get it first. Some of this information comes out before it's released by the Cavs, even before it goes up on Cleveland.com. So, to do so, sign up for a 14-day free trial or visit Cleveland.com/Cavs and click on the blue bar at the top of the page. If you don't like it, that's fine. All you have to do is text the word stop. It's easy, but we can tell you that the people who sign up stick around, because this is the best way to get insider coverage on the Cavs from me and Chris. We'll be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, we're back. Chris, I want to talk a little bit about the heart of this Cavs team. And it feels like it's completely different when Donovan Mitchell is off the court. It seems like they're more friendly, more passive, all of those things. And I think we saw it tonight against this rugged New York Knicks team. And there was a moment that I really did not like during this game. When Josh Hart was near the Cavs bench in the corner and hit a wild three and turned to the bench and was literally probably like inside the bench when he finished his three-point attempt and ran back on defense. But before doing so, went and kind of popped the collar of Donovan Mitchell and just kept on moving with a little smile on his face like the game was already over. And it felt like there was no backlash. There was no nothing about the situation. I understand that there are friends and people can be friendly in the league and things of that nature. But when you go in toe-to-toe with somebody and you're not playing and you can't make an impact on the court and then you go and dap them up after the game and hug it out and things of that nature, like, that doesn't sit right to me as a competitor. What do you think about situations like this?
What did you want Donovan Mitchell to do in that situation? Or what did you want the Cavs to do in that situation?
I don't think there was something that could have been done. I just think the reaction could have been better. Nobody on the bench seemed to react at all. Like, they made it seem like it was normal. I would have wanted a glare or something not physical, because that's pushing it too far. Just something intentional being done that made it known that that wasn't okay. I think a stare would have been that, or like maybe a hand swat from Donovan. Like, don't touch me in that moment. Like, I don't know. That's what comes to mind for me.
Yeah, I mean, look, he made a big shot. He's going to celebrate. Players celebrate in front of opposing benches all the time. Players celebrate in front of opposing players all the time. Devin Booker did the Mikal Bridges a couple of weeks ago as soon as he made a three. I think Scottie Barnes did the Mikal Bridges as soon as he made a three recently. So, look, I mean, for the Cavs, if they do not want Josh Hart to celebrate these kinds of moments and play around with them and act like he has ownership of them, then they should box out better. They should defend him at the three-point line a little bit. They should not allow him to get a triple-double on a night that Jalen Brunson was only able to play 47 seconds. So I'm always somebody who is going to say, if you don't like something, stop it from happening. And the Cavs had plenty of opportunities to stop the Knicks from toying with them or stop Josh Hart from toying with them, and it just didn't happen tonight because they scored
38
points in a basketball game.
I get that. That's like in a baseball game, like when the batter hits a home run and the pitcher gets mad at him for celebrating. You can't get mad at him for celebrating if he hit a home run off of you, dog.
Like, throw a better pitch, Johnson.
Correct. And I think that's the only thing that's different and only thing that is mentioned that you mentioned is like people can do other people's celebrations, yada, yada, yada. But don't touch somebody. Like, that's my thing. Like, don't touch me. And Donovan has been very, very clear about that with different players as well in the past. Like, if you're going to touch me, I'm going to touch you back. And in that situation, I did not, I think that's the main point that I didn't like. Like, why are you puffing my collar? Why are you touching my chain? Yada, yada, yada.
Well, it also wasn't Dylan Brooks, right?
Correct.
Dylan Brooks, somebody that Donovan has a history with, does him wrong when he's on the court and playing. That's probably one thing. He's close with Josh Hart. Everybody understands that there is a relationship there. It was a playful interaction between the two. But I do understand that, you know, the perception of it is, here's Josh Hart, a guy who is kicking the Cavs' butt all game long, and here he is celebrating right in front of the Cavs' bench and toying with Donovan Mitchell, the leader of the Cavs. It's just a weird situation, I always feel, Ethan, every time we try to analyze a game after Donovan Mitchell doesn't play. And I know the Knicks did not have Randall, and they didn't have Mitchell Robinson, and they didn't have OG, and they didn't have Brunson. But the Cavs are night and day different when Donovan Mitchell is on the court and when he's off the court. In about 1,700 minutes with him on the court, they've got a 9.7 net rating. 9.7, which is basically the equivalent of the Boston Celtics. Okay. When he's off the court, in 1,200 minutes of this season off the court, the Cavs have a minus 1.5 net rating. It's striking. They don't function the same way offensively, and they don't function the same way defensively, because defensively he's turned it up this year. He's playing at a high level defensively, probably the best level that he's ever played individually from a defensive standpoint. Deflections, corralling loose balls, steals. So when the Cavs are missing their heart and soul, no matter the other circumstances, and when they're missing their leader, their tone setter, their leading scorer, their MVP candidate, it's hard for me personally to analyze this team and start making sweeping declarations about what they can do moving forward, who they can be moving forward. In saying all of that, they did not play well tonight against the Knicks, and they need to play better moving forward here in March. They need to find the form that they showed during those 6 weeks if they're going to get through this gauntlet of a schedule. But for this one night, I think Donovan Mitchell probably would have helped a lot of the things that went wrong for this team, obviously, because he's done that all season long.
And then you look to the next game, and you got the Boston Celtics on TNT against a team that just wiped the floor with the Golden State Warriors by 50 points. We don't like saying it's going to be a barometer game. We don't like saying that it's going to be a make or break game. But I think this game has a lot of eyes on it because of not only the Eastern Conference standings, but also the notion that the Cavs only are where they are because of the so-called easy schedule that they had earlier in the season. And with where they are right now and how they've played since the All-Star break and wanting to get the national attention, they have 4 more games this month on national television. The Celtics on TNT, the Timberwolves on ESPN, the 76ers on NBA TV, and the Nuggets on NBA TV. All of those teams, all of those games are going to be tough, tough, tough for this Cavs team. And it starts with Boston. And you look at how they match up, and you look at how the Celtics are on an 11-game winning streak as of today, it looks so difficult for this team to pull it out. And let's say that Donovan Mitchell can't go on Tuesday. That makes it even more difficult. And I just want to get what you think about this matchup. Let's say both teams are fully healthy, because right now, I don't know if it matters.
Oh, look, I'd be surprised if Boston is not in the NBA Finals. Anything can happen. Injuries happen. Bad stretches of basketball happen. The wrong matchup in the postseason could happen. A team could just play poorly for about a week and a half. That could happen. But this Boston team, the way that they can play offensively and defensively, the way that Drew Holiday has brought a different element to them and Kristaps Porzingis has brought a different element of spacing and three-point shooting and inside-outside game, this is as close to dominant as I feel one team has been since the Golden State Warriors of those 4 straight years going to the NBA Finals. Like, the Celtics have had 1 2-game losing streak all season long, Ethan. 1. Think about that. The level of consistency that they have shown, the level of dominance that they have shown at both ends of the floor. It's hard for me to say that anybody in the Eastern Conference can beat Boston 4 times in 7 tries. So I think the way that I view this is that Boston is on a completely different tier in the East than everybody else. And I felt coming into the year, they probably were at the top of the East to begin with. Now they've separated themselves to create their own little tier. And then comes Cleveland and Milwaukee and Philadelphia if they get Embiid back, and the New York Knicks if they can finally find a way to get healthy. But no matter what happens on Tuesday night, I'm just not going to look at the Cavs and say they belong in the same conversation with the Celtics. They haven't earned that. They haven't played to that level. And Boston, to me, has created so much separation that it feels almost as if whatever happens in the playoffs unrelated to Boston is the only thing that has some kind of uncertainty attached to it.
Yeah, and then you look at their schedule to end the season. We talk about the Cavs having a tough schedule. The Celtics play the Trailblazers, Wizards, Pistons, Bulls, Hawks, and Hornets around 10 to 12 times of their last 22 games of the season. And they've lost 12 games so far. And obviously there's a couple of games that are lumped in there that are against tough opponents like the Suns and the Nuggets and things of that nature. But I think this Celtics team might just continue to go on a run into the postseason, into the playoffs, that they're just going to be hot at the right time. And that leads me to my final question of this podcast for you, Chris. Do you think the Cavs peaked too early?
I don't think it's about peaking, honestly. And I don't feel like they did. And I think Evan Mobley brought it up a little bit following the game tonight. And I think there's some truth to it. Look, they got off to a terrible start, 4-6 in the first 10 games. Then they basically went on a heater that had a large part in probably saving J.B. Bickerstaff's job and keeping the front office from doing something drastic. And now they're in a bit of a funk again. And I just think there were so many circumstances tied to how the Cavs were playing over those 6 weeks that some of those things didn't feel entirely sustainable. And I think more so than the what, I think we have to focus on the how and the why and the process. And I just feel like the Cavs offensively are working so much harder than they did during those 6 weeks. That things are just so much more difficult for them. It doesn't have the same flow. It doesn't have the same rhythm. It doesn't have the same tempo. It doesn't have the same approach. And I think the Cavs need to find a way to get back to that. There's still time for it to happen. There are 22 games left in the regular season. So they could find it again offensively. They can get more answers about what works, what doesn't work. They can get more answers about their every night rotation. But there's a level of variance when it comes to the Cavs throughout the course of this season. And they just have to be, when it comes to March and toward the end of the season, on the right side of that variance. And look, there was no way for them to continue playing the way that they did for those 6 weeks and like have that extend all the way to the end of the season. Because that level of dominance is rare. That level of consistency in the NBA, given the grueling schedule and injuries and all these different factors, that's rare too. The Celtics have found a way to do it, which is why they're so great and why people are talking about them as the clear-cut favorites in the Eastern Conference. But the Cavs weren't going to continue to play like that, no matter what happened, because the schedule is going to get tougher, because guys were coming back from injury, and there are growing pains that come with that. So to me, I don't think that they peaked too early, and I don't think it was a case of that. I think it was them capitalizing on a favorable schedule, them going into a rhythm offensively, them finding a new identity, all that kind of stuff. And it's about taking what worked for those 6 weeks and blending it into this version of the Cavs. It also doesn't help that guys have gone into a bit of a funk and guys have gone into cold streaks. And that happens from time to time in the NBA. It happened at the wrong time for the Cavs coming out of the All-Star break. I think there's time for them to find it again. They just have to go out and find it again and execute the way that they did for those 6 weeks.
Yeah, and I think that that question about peaking is just one that I've seen a lot around the Cavs team. And I honestly don't think we've seen the best version of the Cavs team fully healthy. Obviously, we all know that the 6 week stretch was ignited by Evan Mobley and Darius Garland going out. And now they've been trying to still figure out these rotations and how good they can be and use the offensive scheme that they learned and figured out was working when they were gone in this group of players that is now fully healthy while trying to give minutes to all these players. I don't think they figured that out yet. And they have 22 games left to do so. And I feel like if they can do that, by the time that they are scheduled to go to the playoffs or the play-in or whatever they're going to be in by the time the season is over, I think that's what they need at this moment. being able to know that they're going to have players that can play in the schemes that they've adapted to, and or creating a different scheme with the players that they have. Obviously, it might be a little late to go and switching things up now, but I think just being able to learn what this team can do with everybody together is something that the Cavs still have not done. They have not, to me, had a game where they've been completely dominant on the defensive end and completely dominant on the offensive end against a higher caliber team. I'm not talking about the Pistons. I'm not talking about the Wizards. I'm talking about playing a team that puts up competition on a nightly basis and could potentially be in the playoff run, because that's the kind of game that this team needs, not only to show themselves that they can do it, but to give them confidence that they are working towards something that is real.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting too, Ethan, because there is a belief that the Cavs just aren't playing the same way stylistically that they did over those 6 weeks when Darius and Evan Mobley were sidelined. And in some ways, that's right. They're playing two bigs more throughout the course of the game. I think Jared Allen and Evan Mobley got 16 minutes together, I want to say, tonight against New York. So there are pockets throughout the course of the game where there are two bigs as opposed to one big and four shooters. But one of the things that so many fans liked about what the Cavs were doing, not just winning those games, but how they were winning those games, they were passing the ball. Everybody was touching it. Since the All-Star break, and it's only been six games, and we'd admit that there's been a lot of inconsistency with their effort, a lot of inconsistency with their attention to detail, their focus, and just their play overall. But since the All-Star break, they're still fifth in the NBA in total passes. They're making 300 plus passes a night. The only teams making more than them, San Antonio, Chicago, Golden State, Indiana. So the level of passing that they had during those 6 weeks or whatever, it's the same as it's been. They're not necessarily making the same shots. Guys have fallen into shooting slumps at the wrong time. The efficiency hasn't been there for Donovan Mitchell, even when he has been on the court. Same thing with Darius Garland. It feels like teams are making things more difficult on Donovan to get into the paint and Darius Garland to get into the paint. It feels like they're trying to collapse and force some of the other guys on the Cavs to beat them from the outside or to make the plays. And that was to be expected, of course. But it just doesn't feel, beyond the win-loss record and beyond some of the inconsistency, it just doesn't feel like they're playing an entirely different way. It's just not getting the same results that they did, in part because they're playing against better teams that are able to capitalize on the down moments throughout the course of games. I don't know.
That's how you end the conversation when you're giving advice to someone and
yeah,
you don't want them to take the advice and go the wrong way. It's at the end of the day, I don't know.
Guys got to
play. We are all learning together. We just got a little bit more insight than some of the fans with our access, and we try to give as much insight into the game as we can. But we are enjoying this process with you, and we hope that we can continue to give you guys the coverage that you deserve. But until next time, that'll wrap up today's episode of the Wine and Gold Talk podcast. But remember to become a Cavs insider and interact with Chris and me by subscribing to Subtext. Sign up for a 14-day free trial or visit cleveland.com/Cavs and click on the blue bar at the top of the page. If you don't like it, that's fine. All you have to do is text the word stop. It's easy, but we can tell you that the people who sign up stick around, because this is the best way to get insider coverage on the Cavs from me and Chris. This isn't just our podcast, it's your podcast. And the only way to have your voice heard is through Subtext. Y'all be safe. We out.